Carnivores Don't Get Sunburn. Hosted by Carrie Mann. Dive into the extraordinary journey of rediscovering optimal health through the carnivore diet. Here, we share powerful transformations from reversing chronic illnesses to achieving peak human potential. Each episode, we'll explore the real stories of those who've turned their lives around, embracing a diet that's as natural as the sun. Stay tuned as we uncover the science, the success stories, and the secrets to thriving on this ancestral diet. Plus, don't miss our exciting documentary highlights featuring a diverse range of carnivore champions. Ready to challenge the conventional? Let's get started.
So I walked into the house and my mom and dad were dressed and they said, he's dead. And his mom came around the corner and looked me in my eye and said, why not you? And the truth is, nobody knew me. I've got 6 documented traumatic brain injuries. You realize you're approaching 260 pounds. And it has to do with the fact that we as Americans are killing ourselves by what we're eating. Have you thought about suicide? I said, yeah, I think about suicide every day. Went into YouTube and I said, hey, I've got this problem. And up pumps a whole bunch of folks. And isn't that what Dr. Barry and you and others have said? Try it for 30. You know, if you like it at 30, go for 60. Oh, you like it at 60, go to 90. Well, today is 90, ladies and gentlemen. I have had 0 dark episodes. I am happier than I've been in years.
Hello and welcome. Carrie here from Healing Humanity, the Power of a Proper Human Diet. And today I'm honored to have Arn on the channel. We were hoping to talk a little bit sooner. I'm glad we finally connected. Arn, how are you doing?
I'm doing exceedingly well, Carrie. How about yourself?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm doing better than I deserve. I'm thankful, grateful, blessed, happy to be here. I'm really looking forward to hearing your story. You've told me a little bit about it, and you've got a book as well. So maybe if we could start out, could you tell me a little bit more about your backstory, your history, maybe a little bit about your life before you found keto carnivore?
Well, certainly. To start out, I spent 23 years in the Marine Corps. 23 great years, which brought me in contact with people all around the world and not always in a confrontational mode. What I didn't understand at the time was that I was having issues. I basically thought it had to do just with the fact that I was pushing too hard, I was driving myself, and by the different assignments that I had, I worked in the terrorism field pretty much for my last 14 years in the Marine Corps. And consequently, it took me all over the world, but at the same time, it put me in situations that I didn't fully understand, but looking back, you can see where I was heading down a very dark road for a while. One of my last assignments I had before I retired was part of a 4-man team that principally worked in the Middle East, Southwest Asia, and Africa. And we were very effective. Some people might say we were a bit too effective because we were targeted numerous times, specifically by name. The last time we were supposed to go into a specific area, before we departed Frankfurt, we were told, don't go there. go here instead. The aircraft we should have been on was hijacked, and the official Americans on board were killed. That should have been us. And that mentally put me in a position where I was saying, darned, you know, this is really getting to be a lot heavier than I had expected. So by the time I got back to the command and turned myself into the dock, I said, hey, I'm really concerned. He says, but do you like the job? I said, of course I like the job. He says, well, then we're not going to put this in your record, because if I do, you're off the team. And that's what's going on across the board for so many professionals, especially those that work in special operations, law enforcement, any profession where you have to be able to function at the top of your game all the time. And although the military and the civilian world have got programs in place to assist you when you're starting to realize that you're in trouble, in many cases, it's lip service. You come in, you say, hey, chief, I'm having an issue. The chief can do one of two things. He can say, okay, fine, take a couple days off, or go to the doctor, or. But every time that happens, it goes into your record. Now, when you think about it from the military standpoint, there's got to be life after the military. So you're very concerned about what's in your medical record. If I would have had anything in my medical record at that time that indicated that I was having issues, likely in the civilian world, I would have been ineligible for law enforcement. I would have been ineligible maybe to do something as simple as fly an airplane or learn how to fly, become a pilot, because those kinds of things in your record can be detrimental to your being hired. So what do? We self-medicate. We go to alcohol. Some people go to drugs. We ignore it to the detriment not only of ourselves, but of our family. And by ignoring it, it just sits under the radar. And until you finally hit that crunch point, and it could be years later, and in my case, that's exactly what happened. It was years later. My son, also a Marine, was at the VA hospital in Long Beach, and he said, hey, Dad, would you mind coming in and meeting my doctor? And I said, no, that'd be really great. I go in, shake hands. He goes, Vietnam vet. I said, uh-huh. He goes, well, would you mind taking an online survey? I said, no, I'm happy to do it. So I sat down and I answered all these questions. I hit enter and it says, seek professional help immediately. Mm. And I kind of went, ugh. That's not good. Anyway, I was due to go home, and I had an appointment at the VA with my primary care physician. And it takes a long time for me to trust people. I can't open up. I want to be that 10 o'clock appointment that when the primary care physician sees it, they smile. They go, oh, this is going to be great. Arne's coming in. He's going to tell stories. He's going to be a lot of fun. And so I was pumped up. I'm going to go in. I'm going to see my doc. We're going to have another great meeting. She's going to say, keep doing what you're doing. And I'm going to walk out. Oh, I walked in and she was sitting there and she says, oh, you know, you're one of my last patients, because I'm leaving. I'm going back to Johns Hopkins. And I was devastated. Hmm. The person I needed, the anchor I had, the one person I could look at and say,
Quick interruption. Thank you so much for watching. If you're interested in learning more about our documentary, Healing Humanity, The Power of a Proper Human Diet, or supporting it, please visit donate.healinghumanity.movie. Our goal is to reach millions of people that are hopeless right now, and sharing the examples of real people over the course of 1 year that are undertaking a proper human diet to overcome obesity, type 2 diabetes, depression, anxiety, fertility issues. We couldn't do it without you. We thank you so much. We are also selling these shirts, Healing Humanity, The Power of a Proper Human Diet. Every penny we get from those goes towards the documentary. And last, we have memberships. If you click the little join button, it's best to do it on desktop. Under any one of my YouTube videos, you can join and become a member. We have hundreds of members right now. We do members only videos. We do members only behind the scenes. You can email me as a member and I'll answer you. And every penny from that goes to support the documentary. And the last thing is we have these Redmond's portable salt shakers. These things are awesome. You can get the best salt. You can take it with you. We sell these on the website along with our water bottles and cutting boards, and every penny from all of those goes 100% towards supporting the documentary. You can also sign up for our newsletter, which is completely free. All of these links are in the description below. Thank you so much for your support. Now back to today's video.
I'm okay is not going to be there anymore. And I lost it. I totally broke down in her office. And I related all of this angst I had from my military career, my job in the civilian world. And she said, just sit here. Everything will be fine. So I'm sitting there. She comes back a few minutes later. She said, okay, I've got you a consult immediately with the mental health clinic. Why don't you go on down there and see what they can tell you? So I said, okay, great. I took it from her and she looked at me and she says, I know you too well. You're going to go right home, aren't you? I said, yep. I'm not going to any appointment with any mental health people. And she says, take my hand. And we walked down to the mental health clinic. I spent 4 hours in there with the clinician. And I basically bled all over the place. Now, this is 2009. And I'm in the program now. But I'm staying on the periphery. I go through all the things they want you to do. I learned about Tai Chi. I learned about acupuncture. I learned about biofeedbacks. I did it all. I got my diploma for being 100% fixed. And I wasn't. I was faking it the entire time. I wanted them to think I was okay. And about 2018, I was asked if I wanted to be part of a 4-year study that was going to take place at a prestigious medical center up in DC, looking at a possible correlation between Vietnam era servicemen, not about the war, but about the time frame, with PTSD and the possible onset of Alzheimer's. So I said, this is going to be cool. Let's go up there and find out what this is all about. It's a 4-year study. This could be interesting. I like being the guinea pig. And I sat down and I said, do you know why you're here? I said, yes, I do. Well, let us tell you what you're going to be doing for the next 4 years once a month. You're going to come up here. We're going to do cognitive testing. It's going to be written. It's going to be verbal. We're going to do brain scans. We're going to do MRIs. We're going to do spinal taps. And I went, spinal taps? She goes, oh, yeah. I said, good. I've got a high pain threshold. Bring on the spinal taps. Hmm. So after about 3 visits, they're looking at my previous medical record. And they did my entire military background and all my medical stuff. And they said, well, we're looking at a few things that have kind of cause us to question a few things. Number one, you're on statins. I go, well, yeah. She goes, why? I said, the doctor said it's prophylactic. I don't have any heart conditions. I don't have any problems like that. Well, then why are you on it? Because the doctor said I should be on it. You've indicated earlier on that you're a writer. I said, yeah, I write books. I write reports. I do stuff like that. How's your book coming? I said, it's not. I have got a total block. My action figures look like cardboard cutouts. She goes, I can't tell you officially to do this, but I suggest you get off the statin because the statin blocks cholesterol. Your system makes cholesterol. Your brain uses cholesterol. You're blocked because possibly, I can't tell you it's exactly what it is, but you're blocked likely because of the statin. So when you go back and you see your primary care physician, get off of that. He said, oh, okay. Oh, by the way, you're on blood pressure medication. I go, sure. Yep, I am. I've got high blood pressure. She goes, well, we've been testing you every time you come here. I said, yeah. She goes, it doesn't show that you have high blood pressure. Your average is about 120 over 76. I said, well, what's the difference? She goes, well, when we take your blood pressure, where do you go? I said, well, I go over into that room and I sit down and take my blood pressure. She goes, and when you're at the VA hospital, how does that go? I said, well, I get up, I drive in, I sit down. The nurse says, hey, we're going to take your blood pressure. She says, sure, take your blood pressure. They put the cuff on. And the first question out of their mouth is, have you thought about suicide? I'm going, what? She goes, well, there's a number of things we ask you. Do you smoke? Have you thought about suicide? I said, yeah, I think about suicide every day. She was up and out of that chair and going down the hall. I go, where are you going? She goes, you're complaining about suicide. I said, no, I'm trying to write a book about suicide. So the folks at the medical center up in the DC said, you can get off of that blood pressure medication. To this day, I'm not on any prescribed drugs. Hmm. And I credit that with starting basically the keto lifestyle change. I don't like to call it a diet. It's my lifestyle. It's what I have become. So I'm in my first 6 months during the study, and they said, why are you on Zoloft? I said, because I'm aggressive, because I'm very straightforward, because I don't suffer fools gladly, because I get pissed off easy. And they said, well, you realize you're approaching 260 pounds. I go, yeah. You know, it's very likely it's the Zoloft that's doing that. I'm going, what do you mean? Well, SSRIs have a tendency to sometimes cause weight gain. I said, oh, that reminds me. Back in 2009, when I was having my issues, they put me on Zoloft. And I was working for the city at the time. And as I walked by a storefront in my uniform, I realized I couldn't see my belt buckle. So I went into the doc and I said, Doc, what am I going to do? Well, you need to eat less, run more, and keep taking the Zoloft. Well, I stopped the Zoloft on my own back then, and I dropped 50 pounds. But of course, now, 2018, they've got me back on Zoloft again, and I'm up to 200 and almost 260 pounds. And she said, you probably don't need to be on that either. I said, well, what do you recommend? She said, I can't tell you this officially, but have you considered a ketogenic lifestyle? I said, what's that? Well, basically, you can eat steak. all you want. I'm going, I'm there. I've been eating meat since I was a kid. Sign me up. She goes, when you get back to your primary care physician, talk to them about the Zoloft when you're in with the psychiatrist. I said, awesome. So I had some very bad depressive incidents. And my best Marine buddy, he and I were in Vietnam at the same time. And in fact, we would be getting back to Chicago within 5 days of each other. And we were pumped. I mean, we were going to burn the candle at both ends. We were going to tear Chicago up from one end to the other. And I got home earlier and couldn't wait for him to arrive. And I got back to the house about 3 a.m. and all the lights were on in my house. And that's not good. So I walked into the house and my mom and dad were dressed and they said, he's dead. And I got back in my car and I drove over to his house. 2 days later, I escorted his body to the funeral home in my Marine uniform. His sister was there. We hugged. His mom came around the corner and looked me in my eye and said, why not you? At the time, I was a little shocked, but I knew in my heart she didn't mean that. And so I stood next to his coffin for 3 days, buried him. And that stuck with me all those years. And the Vietnam Veterans Memorial up in D.C., the wall? That's where the names of all of the 58,000 plus are. Well, he's on the wall. And so every February 5th, I go up and spend some time with him. And on February 5th, 2020, I went to the wall. I stood there. And I totally broke down. A volunteer came up and he said, are you okay? I said, no, I'm not. So we talked for a while, and finally he said, are you feeling better? I said, yeah, I'm okay. So I got back in my car, and I started driving back to the farm. And the farm is way out in the country, and to get there, you have to go down these small roads. Well, you know about small roads. I grew up in Chicago. My family's got homes all over Wisconsin. I know small roads. Well, on our small roads, you get passed by a lot of cars. And so I actively began planning my suicide. And I realized my background is such that I'm a hard-charging Marine. Everybody knows it. I've been in professional soccer for over 50 years. I'm well known. I've got military and civilian awards coming out the yin yang. I could not allow my suicide to become a stigma for family, for friends who are saying, how could this have happened? What happened? This is not the Arn we know. And the truth is, nobody knew me. They knew something was wrong, but they didn't know me. So as I drove down the road, I was passed by cars and every so often by a big logging truck. And I said, awesome. Death by logging truck. I drive a Mazda. If there's a head-on accident, likely I'm going to be dead. I'll be dead. My image is going to be maintained, and it'll all be just a terrible accident. So I finished my drive. I got back to the farm, and I was driving up the driveway. It's about 100 yards long up to my beautiful old house. My house was built in 1783. It's a beautiful Virginia gentleman's farmhouse. And as I drive up the road, I could see my service dog, Raider, come bouncing down the steps, coming over to see me. And his tail is wagging out a semaphore message of love. And what I usually do is I stop the car, you open the door, he'll jump in, get up on my lap, start kissing me and all that. But not today. I just sat there. And he sat outside the door and he gave me this look like, hey, is something wrong? And I said, yes, something's wrong. At that moment, though, I recognized how selfish suicide would have been. Who else is waiting for me to come home? Who else loves me so much that I am that most important part in their life right then? How selfish it would have been. So the next day, I turned myself into the VA. I started daily clinicals that very day. In fact, I'm still with the same clinician after 4 years. She's fantastic. She convinced me to be part of a 12-week program. And I figured, yeah, what the heck, I can do this. So we started the 12-week program and everything was going well. It was just she and I. And at 6 weeks, she said, you know, this is over in 6 weeks. I said, what do you mean? She goes, the VA only allows this type of an intervention for 12 weeks. Once you're in the program, you get to the end of the program, it's over. I go, what do you mean it's over? She goes, yeah, you'll end up with somebody else and this and that. I go, wait a second. And as I said earlier on, Carrie, it takes me a long time to establish a trust level with anybody. And here was my trust level being pulled out from underneath me again. And I lost it right in the middle of our clinical session. I said, you can't do this. My book is called Suicide in the 90-Day Window. And that's because it's like riding a roller coaster once you get into the program. You have all the dips and the dark tunnels and the screaming and the yelling and the excitement and all of that. And you get to the top of that final big hill. That's 6 weeks into that 12-week program. But here's how the roller coaster changes. Instead of heading down the hill, zipping and zapping and going rest right into a nice, comfortable stop, the roller coaster breaks into two different sets of cars. That one set of car is going to make it all the way to the end of the ride. You get off and everybody's excited and it's fun. But that other set of cars starts twisting and turning, and where you think it's going to stop, it crashes right through the barrier. And you're a statistic. So, I said, well, what do we do now? She says, well, I'd like to get you into another program and get evaluated to see what we can do at the VA to help you more. But you're going to have to take some more interviews and tests. One of the things we want you to do is to get a Nexus letter. And I don't know if you know what those are, but it basically where a professional sits down with you. They read your entire medical record, and then they start asking you questions. and they come to a determination on how disabled are you. And if I may, let me read what the doctor's nexus letter said. Member has an occupational and social impairment with deficiencies in most areas. Number one, work, family relations, and social relations. Number two, mood due to such symptoms as suicidal ideation. Three, near continuous panic or depression affecting impaired impulse control, such as unprovoked irritability with periods of violence. Four, difficulty in adapting to stressful circumstances, including in a work or a work-like setting. And lastly, inability to establish and maintain effective relationships at work, with family, and with friends. Carrie, I was a basket case. But the outside world didn't know it. I am so highly functional that I can put on an act that you, well, maybe you could believe. So the final determination was that I was 100% disabled for combat-related PTSD, multiple situations. I've got 6 documented traumatic brain injuries, and I'm considered permanently and totally unemployable. I taught sailing for 30 years. I certified sailing instructors, and in these 4-day courses, recognizing how broken I was, I would start off the class with, "Hey, kids, this is going to be really a lot of fun. I'm going to demonstrate throughout the course good instructor attitudes and bad instructor attitudes. And I want you to be aware when these happen so you can point them out." What I was really doing, Carrie, is I was protecting myself. Because I knew that some student is going to say something that's going to trigger me. It might be something as simple as, so you were in the Marines, huh? Well, yeah. I hate Marines. Marines did bad things in Vietnam. You're nothing but a baby killer. Now, do you think that's going to set me off? Yeah. But in the context that I set up, everybody said, that's just Arn being Arn. And wasn't that the problem? Arn being Arn was the problem. So I got off the Zoloft. I got off the statins. But I was still at the VA once a week. And I would sit down in the mental health waiting room or waiting to pick up a prescription, and I would talk to the other veterans that are there. And one day I was sitting in the waiting room, and I was wearing a FBI Academy polo shirt. And this lady comes up to me and she says, are you at the FBI Academy? I said, no, I train. In one of my jobs, I trained FBI special agents, and I'm up at Quantico all the time. So I got this cool polo shirt, and I like to wear it. She goes, I'm here with my son. He's over there. And I turned around, and here's this young man curled up in the chair, sucking his thumb. And she says, I don't know what to do. I said, well, that makes 2 of us now. And so over the last few years, what I did is I did an unscientific survey. And here's what I found to be the difference between a veteran in a dark room sucking his thumb and a highly functional veteran. And it breaks down like this. The young man in the dark room likely came from a single family, single parent family, was not well liked in school, did not participate in sports, no Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, and joined the military to change their life. The highly functional two-parent family, well-liked in school, competitive sports, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, and joined the military to serve their country. It wasn't about a selfish me. It was about a very bright us. But the last part and the most telling is the highly functional believed in God. They knew that when the shit hit the fan, no matter how bad it got, there was something bigger than themselves out there that they could turn to. And it makes all the difference in the world. So I finished that four-year program. I started researching how to fix myself better. I was still about 247 pounds. So I started doing what I do best. I'm a research analyst. I've got an undergraduate degree in psychology, and I've got a graduate engineering degree from Southern Cal. I'm also a graduate of the National Intelligence University. So I've got a good, strong research analyst background. I know that if you're looking for an answer, you have to have at least three separate and distinct sources for the information that you're going to formulate to come up with an answer to your problem. So I did what I do best. I jumped into Google and I'm saying, here are all the things that's wrong with me. What am I going to do? And they gave you all kinds of answers. But those were your standard answers. Take drugs, work hard, fewer carbs, have a nice day. In fact, that's what I was initially getting at the VA before I became a little smarter. So I went into YouTube and I said, hey, I've got this problem. And up pumps a whole bunch of folks. I think Dr. Berg probably jumped up first, immediately followed by Dr. Ken Berry. And so I started researching and looking at this stuff. And the more I looked at it, the deeper I got into it. And so I started changing my lifestyle. I was still having very severe dark periods. I started doing my exercise routine again. I continued to research, and I got back to writing my book. One of the chapters in my book is called Soft Core Suicide. And it has to do with the fact that we as Americans are killing ourselves by what we're eating, by following the standard American diet. Over the last 40 years, we have put ourselves into a nut sandwich. And you don't get the answer you need. You get the drug they prescribe. We don't have time anymore for you to come in and explain to your doctor what the situation is. They just type it into the computer. They see what your symptoms are, and they prescribe a drug. That's not the answer. Maybe the first question they should have asked was, hey, Arn, you're fat. What the heck are you eating? And you go, nobody ever asked that question before. Well, I'm asking. I ended up with such a fantastic doctor at the VA, Dr. Noon, just great. And he said, okay, we got you off the drugs. You're starting to lose weight. Keep doing what you're doing. I said, awesome. Hey, and how's your book coming, Arne? It's doing great. In fact, and I had just written Dr. Barry and Nisha about how well things were going. And I gave him an excerpt of Softcore Suicide. And he came back and said, that is a great title for a chapter, because that's really what we're doing. I am so pumped about being healthy, about being off all drugs, about being 204 pounds. I am doing my best to get this information out, but I'm failing on so many fronts. And that's one of the reasons I wrote the book. I am tired of living this long. I'm going to be 79 this month. Living this long, and I'm losing family and friends in numbers that are depressing. And the last thing I need is being depressed. And so I kept doing more research. The weight thing was good. I was still having some pretty dark moments. And I came, I was watching Dr. Barry interview Dr. Georgia Ead. And I'm listening to her and I'm going, well, yeah. Yeah, I feel like crap when I do this, but I feel good when I do this. And so I got deeper into that. And then I ended up with Brett Scher, who was originally diet doctor, and now he's with Metabolic Mind. And I'm doing this. I've got over 1,500 YouTube videos on my laptop. And I just get pumped with these. And then comes Dr. Chris Palmer and Brain Energy. And I'm going, hey, they're talking about me. This is awesome. And Dr. E just came out with Change Your Diet, Change Your Mind.
Yeah.
And I listened to that over and over again because it's so spot on. That's me. And of course, I was listening to Dr. Barry and you came on. And I remember clearly in your discussion, and this has got to be 3-4 months ago, you said, well, Dr. Barry, I don't want to put you on the spot, but you did the same thing to Chafee when you were talking to him. I don't want to put you on the spot, but, and you know what? Each of them, and there were more than just the two, said, I'm in. And I'm saying, why are they in? Why is this guy I've never heard about got them to where they're on board? So I went back and I started with your first video where you were explaining. Actually, it wasn't so much explaining the photograph of a year ago. I'm going, holy shit, this is pretty awesome. And I was happy where I was, but I wasn't where I needed to be. So on 1 February, I started Lent a little early. And I said, I'm going to go hardcore carnivore. I'm not only going to switch to beef, butter, bacon, and eggs, and I love shrimp. I have a pound of shrimp every Sunday after Mass. But I'm also going to cut out all alcohol. And alcohol has been a problem for me. I used to start with a Bloody Mary at 10. I'd have a beer at 11. I'd have 2 glasses of wine with lunch. I'd have high tea, but my tea was usually something a little stronger than tea at 4. I'd drink a bottle of wine making supper, and then a bottle of wine with supper. And at 10 o'clock, I'd finish it off with a fine single malt whiskey. That was my life and my alcohol addiction. So one February, I cut all of that out. And the first week on full carnivore, I started really feeling different. Now, remember, I've been having recurring dark episodes for the last 4 years. And I can tell you exactly what causes the biggest, deepest, darkest episode when things are fine. It's chocolate. When I eat chocolate, I go dark very fast. And the next day, I've got to be very aware of what's going on. So one February, ha, no chocolate, no alcohol, beef, butter, bacon, and eggs. And I'm rolling. Now, I still talk to my clinician every 6 weeks, but because of my PTSD, I'm in with a clinician every week. I'm monitored very closely. They've given me this machine that I've got to answer questions every day. And if I don't answer them right, I get a call right back. Hey, Arn, you said yes to this question. What's going on? And I explained it to him. So I've got this other relationship with another clinician weekly. And I told her what I'm doing. I said, yeah, beef, butter, bacon, and eggs. And she goes, and no chocolate, right? I said, no chocolate. So here we are. This is almost exactly 3 months now, 90 days. And isn't that what Dr. Barry and you and others have said? Try it for 30. You know, if you like it at 30, go for 60. Oh, you like it at 60, go to 90. Well, today is 90, ladies and gentlemen. I have had zero dark episodes. I am happier than I've been in years. I am so pumped up that my daughter doesn't want to talk to me. She goes, Dad, relax. Grow up a little bit. And I'm going, no, I'm not going to do that. I leave for France tomorrow. I'll be on a pilgrimage to Lourdes, France, that I do annually with my order. And we're going to take folks there looking for a cure for both the physical and mental challenges. I've always enjoyed going. This year, they're going to have to be really careful because I am so pumped. I'm going to be doing everything, going everywhere. I'm sponsoring a young man, and his sister will be there. And there's going to be 8,000 of us in Lourdes, France. And I am going to be the puller, pusher, mover and shaker, pumped up, stay out of my way, lead, follower, here I come. So I told you, I like being the guinea pig. I am the guinea pig. I'll try something and I'll journalize it. But yeah, life is so good. And I don't have to tell people, I just have to be around people. Friends that have known me for years, they all knew there was a problem, but they didn't realize how deep the problem was. I had people I worked with that later on have told me they were terrified of me because they didn't know which Arn was going to show up that day. Mm-hmm. Well, here I am. It's that day, Carrie. It's that day. This is the Arn I want to be around for them for as long as the good Lord lets me be here. And it's having an opportunity and watching folks like you and Jen, now that she's getting on board, come on, Jen, have a big steak. But yeah, I am so blessed. And I am so pumped about what you're doing with Healing Humanity, because it's going to have an effect. Not that the other influencers aren't having an effect, but you're the everyday guy who's having the effect. You're that guy down the street who you said, hey, what's going on? And they go, oh, hi, Kerry. How's it going? Now it's, Kerry, how are you? What's going on? I was at the VA a couple weeks ago, and I saw a veteran I haven't seen in a while. And I stared, because this guy looked totally different. And he goes, hey, Arn, it's me, Tom. I said, yeah, I get it. And he goes, what do you think? I go, Tom, you look great. What's going on? He goes, yep, doctor was upset. He said, you know, being almost 300 pounds is not a good thing. I've lost 60 pounds. I said, how are you doing it? He goes, I'm on Ozempic. I said, Tom, do you know? He goes, no, Arn, look, 60 pounds down. I said, well, how do you feel? Because they never explained to him the side effects. Yeah, he doesn't feel like eating, but doggone it, Tom, what's it doing to your body? You're going to be on this forever. Oh, no, I'm only on it for about 6 months. I said, Tom, you'll probably put it all back on. And that's kind of where the conversation ends, because you know when you're talking to somebody and you're having a positive impact, it pumps both of you up. But I walked away feeling disappointed, not in Tom, but disappointed in the system that is considering that the panacea, and it's not. It's so easy. This is so free. You just walk down to the store. I'm to the point now, when I walk into my local grocery store, they know when I'm coming. And they know on markdown day, I'm going to be there with this big push cart. And I loaded up what every different kind of meat that's been reduced. And they reduced 50%. It was $16 a pound yesterday. It's $6 a pound now. And you can get all kinds of cool grass-fed this, grass-fed that, and they're marked down. And I say, why is this stuff marked down? He goes, people don't know that they could eat this. So they see it and they figure, well, I'll just go with the store brand. And so they don't purchase it. Well, here I am. I loaded my cart up. I'm making meat all the time. Oh, yeah. Life is good. So wow. I am having an impact on my family. When I show up, it's all steak. Where it used to be mashed potatoes, corn, this, that, I come in, it's big cuts of meat, brisket, this, that, pork belly. I never had pork belly before. Life is good, Kerry. Life is so good.
That's incredible. You're giving me goosebumps, some of the things you're saying. I'm so happy for you, first of all.
Thank you.
You've healed yourself. That's really what you've done, right? You're healed now.
Yep.
And the fact that when you said you're 79, my goodness, you look incredible for 79. It's not just the look either. You got the energy, the carnivore zen, the energy, whatever it is. Some of the things you said earlier really hit close to home for me with the suicidal ideation and things like that. It's such a hard thing too, because for me, part of the hard part was constantly thinking about those things, mm-hmm. but then trying to put on a happy face or I always tried to be a straight shooter and be honest with people, but then you're just dragging people down. So you're able to mask it. And basically I feel like a big phony kind of going around like that for years and years, which is makes it even much more worse than just the depression itself in some ways. But
yeah,
I used to do the same thing as you, just constantly try to think of ways to just end it until I realized, similar to you, it's like, man, it was a selfish thing. I'm so happy that you're sharing your story, because one of the things with this is, it's like, you got to be incredibly brave, independent to become a Marine, to do what you've done. But then there's this flip side when you have this depression, anxiety, there's like this stigma about talking about it. Like it's a weakness or something, but you were brave enough to be a Marine and to do that, but now also talk about it, which is going to help so many other people. And I don't know what it is with it, but I wish there wasn't this stigma. Even when I talk about it for myself, having never served or being a Marine or being a tough guy or anything like that, there's this stigma around it. And we've got to change it, because it's just, sadly, it's getting worse and worse. You mentioned Dr. Georgia Eads. She's incredible. By the way, I put her on the spot too.
I had her on the channel. I missed that one.
Yeah, that was a more recent one. I did some of those early ones. That wasn't intentional. I realized after the fact, wow, I said to Dr. Barry, Dr. Chafee, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I put Dr. Eads on the spot too, and she's going to be in the documentary. But the book that you mentioned, Change Your Diet, Change Your Mind, I cried when I read that book. And I said to her, if I had this book 20 years ago, it would have changed my life. Like, the answers that I was seeking most of my adult life through horrible suicidal depression, it just got worse and worse. The answers were in that book. That book is incredible. And Chris Palmer too, like you mentioned, and Brett Shear, Metabolic Mind.
Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing. Like, we got to get the word out to everyone, because what Dr. E told me was, I'm like, well, how's it going with this mental health, depression, anxiety? It's grim. She looked in the camera and she said, it's grim and it's getting worse. Like 40% of college students have mental health issues. She estimates over 1 billion people right now have mental health issues in the world. And as you know, Arn, and I know, that's 1 billion reported people. How many aren't reporting it? I didn't report it for a very long time. You didn't report it for a long time or even know about it for a long time. We're talking billions of people right now. PTSD, depression, anxiety, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder. And it's like, for you and I, how can you not be excited about this? It's depressing at one hand, but it's exciting on the other hand, because it's like, here's the answer. It's not that complicated.
I agree. And this last weekend, I was at a 3-day conference on mental health ministry. And this is where we bring people in from all over the United States that are working in a mental health ministry capacity. And the presentations were really great. But what was more impactful was sitting there at the table during meals. I have always done this. I walk in, I find a table, and I sit down by myself to see who's going to show up. And then the conversation starts. By the third day of this conversation, as you said, I can be very overexcited, if you will. I have no problem talking about this as a possible intervention, but you can't really talk about this in a clinical setting like that. And it's clinical. It may seem like it's just a bunch of folks with some limited background who get together and try to help each other, but it's a clinical setting. In my early years, I ran the Marine Corps' drug and alcohol abatement program at Camp Pendleton in California. One of the best programs run. We were rated number one in the nation at the time. And they would send me to school. They sent me to UCLA, to medical school, to learn about drug and alcohol issues. That because we had a lot of people returning from Vietnam specifically. And then they sent me to University of Oklahoma at Norman to their medical school for 6 weeks and this and that. So those were all good background. But more recently, I've become an instructor for mental health first aid through the National Council on Mental Well-Being. And the 6.5, almost 7 hours of presentation concludes with self-care. Because when you're dealing with folks, when you're doing a peer-to-peer, you're opening yourself up to their life. And you have to be very aware of where you're fitting in or not. And so one of the last sections that we teach is on self-care. And it's up to this point where we're finally allowed to talk to the learners about who we are and how we came to be here. And it's interesting that there are very few prohibitions about what we can talk about, because there's so many triggers when you're doing this. And I've got to be very cautious, because what the council prefers is that we don't give solutions to possible problems. In other words, I can't talk about how my change in diet has changed my mental well-being. You can't really talk about that. And the same at this conference I was at. I could not sit down and talk to people in a grand setting about how this has changed me. And these are people that some of them have known me for a year and a half, and they've seen the change in me. But you can't really talk about it. And that, I think, is disappointing, because you're sitting at a table with people that have lost loved ones to suicide, or they themselves are in a similar situation to me, where I'm the almost statistic. And to be able to share with them in an open forum about how my diet has changed me to the point where I don't even recognize me sometimes. You know, my daughter is over my shoulder saying, "Dad, shut up. You're too pumped. You're too excited. You don't give anybody else a chance to talk." I go, "Well, if they had something to say, I'd listen." But so, yeah, I think that's part of it. I was listening to Jeff Volek this morning at Ohio State, and he is running a new intervention at Ohio State, working with students with depression, and it's a study that's going on right now. He was talking to Brett Scherer about that this morning. I got into to Dr. Volek because of the work he did with Columbus Crew. Being that I come from the professional soccer side, I was really pumped about that they had the team doing basically the ketogenic lifestyle to improve the fact that they don't burn carbs, they burn fat. If you read behind the lines, the problem that they came to is a problem that's very similar to other folks, is they like carbs. And that's putting them under a lot of pressure to not being eating carbs, even though they see a dramatic increase in their ability on the field and mental and the whole bet. They can't stay away from carbs. So they, in the off season, they'd lapse right back into their carb world. Mm-hmm. And I think Dr. Chafee said the same thing when it comes to rugby. Other people might do it for a while, but they off season, they go right back to carbs again. And then they have to work their butt off literally to get back in shape. He's pretty remarkable too. I married a South African when I was stationed at the embassy in Pretoria. And one of the things she suggested is that I consider rugby. So I actually played one match for Pretoria.
Wow.
The problem was I was the only Yank. And both teams knew it.
You got a target.
My team made me a target. They didn't support me. I got the ball. I got destroyed by both sides. I was a little flyback. I was 174 pounds, very fast, but not fast enough.
Right.
It convinced me rugby is a spectator sport.
It's interesting with rugby and carnivores, though. There's a track record. Dr. Baker as well used to be a rugby player. Baker, it's kind of a common theme.
Well, they're looking for traumatic brain injuries.
Right.
You know, if you get enough hits, you don't know how much it hurts.
Exactly. Hey, on the soft core suicide, this term you've coined.
Yeah.
I agree. I really like share Dr. Barry's sentiment on that. It's a perfect term for things because as everything we just talked about, like with this documentary, there's so many health issues in the world. The biggest reason I did this was for mental health. But then I started seeing, oh my goodness, like type 2 diabetes is reversible. It's just the foods we're eating. Fertility issues, just the foods we're eating in most cases. Then I started learning about cancer and a lot of cancers are caused from chronic inflammation. Well, I was chronically inflamed from all those foods I was eating. But if we ignore all of these issues, which unfortunately humanity, society seems to do, right? It becomes this new normal, like, it's not that bad. Sugar, it's just fine. It all gets this pass as we're getting heavier and heavier and sicker and sicker. But if we ignore all those things, this soft core suicide term, it's like humanity's literally slowly poisoning themselves.
Yes.
We're slowly, and we have this brain fog and fatigue because we're putting the improper food in our bodies. So it's like we're not living our lives to our fullest potential while also probably taking a huge number of years off of our lives. Like Dr. Chafee said before, we should be living to be 120. We're not because we're getting in the way with this food we're eating. So the soft core suicide, I love that term because that was a big epiphany I had with this. It's like, even if we ignore all these other health issues, just the fact that the majority of humanity isn't living life to their fullest potential. When you have that brain fog and fatigue, it's almost like you're a shell of the human being you could be. And you get home, you have goals and dreams, but you're like, I'm just going to plop down on the couch. I'm going to go along to get along. And I'm busy dying. You know, there's that term, get busy living or get busy dying. And you're busy dying, a slow soft core suicide. I love that term. And that's, again, that's one of the reasons I'm still passionate about this for all the people that aren't living to their fullest potential. And then the next generation, like my children that are, like I ate the processed foods. They're eating the ultra processed foods. It's just getting worse and worse. So,
Well, you got to stay busy. That is what I found is so key. You have got to stay busy. I've got my dogs, of course, and they take me for walks. They are busy. They're a lot of fun. I keep myself busy, but I'm still involved in soccer. I go on pilgrimage almost every year. Well, I go with the order to Lourdes every year, but have you ever heard of the Camino de Santiago in Spain?
No.
It's one of the biggest pilgrimages in the world.
Is that the St. Francis of Assisi trail?
No.
Oh, that, okay.
St. Francis of Assisi trail is in Italy.
Oh, right. Okay.
All right. And the one in Italy is called the Via Francigena, which I did in 2021. I did it from Siena to Rome. But the Camino de Santiago has been around for 900 years. There was a movie made by Emilio Estevan and his father called The Way. And they just recently released it again. I did another book early on, and it's called Merchant's List, but it basically is about an attempt to assassinate Pope Benedict the 16th at the cathedral during Holy Year of 2010. I can tell you that it was not successful, but it explains all the ways that the intel world and the international police come together to thwart something like that. It's a fun thing. But anyway, I've done the Camino de Santiago 7 times. And next year for my 80th birthday, I'm going to do it again and hopefully finish up May 21st at the cathedral and write that one up. I also had a YouTube channel called Major Warts and All that I used to help me out of my dark times in 2020, but COVID started. And so I started doing research about it. And I was using all the data that was available with the state of Virginia. And I did 3 presentations on it. And I basically said, this is a new flu. That's all it is. It's following the same cyclical pattern. It is this, it is that, it's not this, it's not that. You don't need to be stuck at home. You've got all kinds of reasons why if you're healthy, it's not going to matter. It's going to be a cold. I was told, Arn, you can't talk about that. Mm. Now, you figured out a little bit about my personality. Don't tell me don't.
Right.
And so I basically flipped them off, and I haven't put anything back on there. But I think I'm at that point now where I think I'm going to start recording again and bring Major Warts and All back.
Yes.
He's my alter ego. He's the one that can tell me to go to hell, and I go, well, thank you. Yeah. But I'm thinking about that. Haven't made a decision yet, but
that would be great.
I'm going to resurrect him.
Just to step back a minute. So this is kind of interesting and crazy. So the St. Francis of Assisi Trail, did you say you did part of that already?
All right. There, all those trails kind of cross each other.
Okay.
All right. The majority of the trails that you've got, especially in Italy, follow the old traditional ways that you've got. So the Roman roads are all there. And so if you do a it's like when I through hiked the Appalachian Trail in 96. That's 2,164 miles from Georgia to Maine. When you do that, you cross so many other trails, because there's only so many ways to get from here to there. And right. So they always cross. But I have not done that. The one trail I did that was probably as far out as you could get, I did St. Magnus Way on Orkney Island in Scotland. I hike in shorts. Big mistake. This is not a trail. This is a just keep walking and hope you don't fall into the ocean trail. And I didn't realize that the stinging nettle was all along that. And so I started getting cut up by the stinging nettle, where I was bleeding from my knees to my ankles. By the time I finished that day, my legs had blown up to twice their normal size. Mm. And I spent 2 days in bed because I was having a hard time. So you got to be careful of those kind of things.
Right. Well, the reason I was
always good.
Right. Well, the reason I was asking is because it's so interesting that you mentioned this. I just returned from South Carolina. We filmed a woman. Her name is Mimi. And she's about.
Yeah, I heard part of that.
Yeah. She's about to turn 70, and she was diagnosed with Parkinson's, rheumatoid arthritis, a full-blown stroke, and then she had a blood infection that put her in the hospital for weeks. And she was just minutes away from dying. She's, of course, similar to you. She found keto, then carnivore diet, and you know the rest of the story. She's absolutely thriving right now.
Yeah.
About to turn 70, but her big goal next year is she's going on this pilgrimage, St. Francis of Assisi. She's going to go 500 miles. She couldn't walk 10 steps before. She was bedridden with a walker. She's going to go 500 miles. She's training for it right now. When we were filming her, I could barely keep up with her. So it's just interesting to me that you mentioned something kind of similar to that.
Yeah, if you do the Camino de Santiago the way that the books, that it says start in the French town of Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port, which is at the foot of the Pyrenees, and then you walk for 790 kilometers to the cathedral at Santiago Iglesia, and that's an eye-opener for a lot of people. And many, many, many people do that every year. So, yeah, it's exciting. You got to stay busy, Kerry. You got to stay busy.
Yeah.
And you're busy. You're always busy.
Well, it's like when you start eating, putting the proper fuel in the tank too, you just have more energy. I'm doing things I never would have done otherwise. It's like I have excess energy. But I just want to say, I absolutely love your story, Arn. Open invite. I'd love to have you on again and maybe explore it some more. If we could you just say, like, what advice would you have for maybe other veterans out there that have PTSD or depression, anxiety? What would you tell them, like, this is what I would do next if I were you?
Let me break it into two different groups. One is the active duty veteran. You got to get over yourself. If you're hurting, you've got to get help. Don't focus on what you're going to do when you get out. Focus on what you can do so that when you do get out, you don't end where you're at. The VA, in their eminent wisdom, has just started implementing a new program that is going to be using psychedelics. I grew up in the 60s. Psychedelics is not the way to go. But that's being considered. Both magic mushrooms and MDMA, which is ecstasy, as a therapy. They say they're going to control it, but I don't see how they can control it. And so the active duty veteran right now needs to seek help now. I know I'm pissing up a rope when I say this, but don't worry about what happens after you get out. You got to take care of the problem while you're still in. Now, that said, there is great literature out there about how veterans respond in a combat situation, and they develop PTSD. You talk to the clinicians that are working with them, and those clinicians can bring back that veteran from the brink. They can do it on such a scale that suicidal ideation is no longer the focus for that veteran. But you marry that veteran up with a commander that they don't respect, and that clinician may never get that veteran back because they are now entering into a position where morally something's wrong. And among the special operations guys, Green Berets, Delta, SEALs, they've got one of the highest rates of suicide active duty because they're not asking for help. Remember back when I started, the doctor said, Arn, if I put this in your record, you're off the team. They want to be on the team. Mm. The veteran that is already retired, the highly functional, does not want to get into a program. They don't want to seek help because when they're at the VA for something as simple as picking up their whatever prescription drug they're on, they're seeing veterans with no legs. They're seeing veterans that are pulling themselves around on a gurney and there's nothing below their belly button. And they don't want to get into the system because they say, look, I am fine. I don't need to be in the system. Veterans, the system is there for you. You earned it. Get into the system. Actually, that's chapter 3 of my book. It walks a veteran through the whole process of you recognize finally you've got a problem. You know you need help. Now let's let the country pay you back, literally. Make that eagle shit every month because you earned that. And you got to do it.
Right.
Family, friends.
That's one. That is incredible. Thank you so much. I wish we could. Normally I go like an hour, already an hour 20. I wish it was a little longer. Seriously, love your story. People are going to want to hear more. So everyone watching this, I'm going to have links in the description so you can find Arn's book. So you can find, do you have anything else you want to shout out or link to? Maybe.
Well, I've just started a .com called Move to the Light. It's on my cup. See?
Move to the Light. Awesome.
MoveToTheLight.com. I just started it. I'm playing with how I can make it work. I need a good 14-year-old to walk me through how to make these kind of things happen. Right. But yeah, so Move to the Light's there. The book, of course. And then if I can get Major Warts and all off his ass, maybe I could start talking to people.
That would be amazing. Hey, if you do that, I'll gladly shout you out and send some folks over your way. I'm sure they'd love to hear that. Your story right here is going to inspire so many people. And that's the whole reason we're doing this documentary. I learned a long time ago, you can't force anyone. Oh, just do like I do. No, but you can inspire them. And when they hear your words and your story, they're going to want to learn more about that. So
yeah, I'm pumped.
I have too. I love your energy. It's very similar to mine.
not even close. Carrie, right? I admire you for so many different reasons, but let me offer you something. You're not 79. You are going to see the impact I can only hope for. Mm. You are now the spearhead. All the rest of us are following you. And you're going to be here to see the change happen. I want to live to be 120. Let's see what happens.
I got a feeling, Arn, you're just getting started right now. You're just getting started.
I'm pumped.
I am too. So much. Thank you so much, Arn. You're incredible. Your story's amazing. I really appreciate you being brave and sharing your story and helping so many people with your book and the work you're doing. Open invite. We got to have another one of these. Maybe we do one live, no pressure, but if you ever want to do a live stream, we can get some questions from the audience live. Open invite if you ever want to do anything again, for sure.
Okay. I would love to do that. As I said, I have to stay busy. So I leave tomorrow for France. I'll be gone. I come back. I'm going right to a soccer tournament. I come back from that. I'm going to chase my dog around for a few days. Then I'm going on a silent retreat for a week.
Wow.
At the Abbey, so I can do more reflecting. But I would be pumped to do a live one. Those are really awesome when you put those together. I like to see the mix of the personalities and how the stories do dovetail so many times and in so many different ways. Very, very exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you got a lot of adventures. That's a theme with Carnivores too, I'm finding. Lots of adventures. It's a good thing. So thank you so much, Arn. Everyone go check out Arn, his book, the links to his website, YouTube channel. I'll have all those in the description. And thank you so much. I really appreciate your time, Arn. Have a good day.
Hey, thanks, Kerry. I'm glad we were able to pull this off.
Absolutely. Bye.